Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hey, everyone. I want to welcome you to the Transformation Cafe. I was listening to our introduction about light spiritual conversations, and here we're in the Cafe Book Club. We're doing Getting the Love That You Really Want by Harville Hendrix and Helen Hunt. And it is light. Hopefully, we're making it a little bit light and jovial as we go through this information. But it's really important stuff. It's stuff about being able to communicate. And, gosh, tonight we're going to be talking about how to handle explosive conflicts and really realizing that actually it's your salvation if you can come from a different perspective and really realize what's going on. So I'm going to go ahead and invite my lovely sister and co-host, Miss Amy Frost. How are you tonight?
I am very confused. I hear you want to talk about re-romancing our relationship, and I want to talk about behavioral change. So I think we have a conflict.
No, I think it's exactly the same. Because it's re-romancing the way you're looking at it, so it's okay.
Well, you know what's interesting? We talk about, so when we think of re-romancing, of course, we think of romancing, right? We think of, you know, significant other and blah, 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 blah. But let's just kind of look at the energy of it. Is the excitement about being in a relationship, isn't it?
Well, yeah, the whole idea of romancing. People are like, ooh, I want to be in a romance.
Well,
that sounds exciting.
Right. And, of course, in terms of, you know, significant other, we hope that would be it. But let's talk about in terms of, you know, friendships or sisterhood, right? I mean, I want there to be an excitement about the relationship, not, oh, my God, you see my phone number and you're like, want to make sure and turn it off, right?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
So I think that may be part of, you know, we can look at this, like, you know, and Michelle is out and about, so she's not with us today, but she really brings that balance of, yes, it's great to talk about this in terms of significant other, but it's also important, especially if you don't have one at the moment, to do this work. How do you do that? And so I think if we can kind of shift it a little bit to look at, you know, at friendship, which I think is significant, and sisterhood, brotherhood, which is really important too. We'll talk about sisterhood since we're sisters. That makes it a little easier, and we're friends, independent of that, I hope. And so, but I think relationship ebbs and tides, and there's an excitement, and there's, oh, God, we're going to deal with that, don't you think? Or do you think that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I think in any relationship, you've got certain aspects of it where once you've known each other for a while, there's avoidances that come up because things happen. You've had experience together or things happen within, you know, I think even in sisterhood, there could be something that's more of something experiential that we both shared together that maybe was an outside thing that ended up causing conflict. And so it's one of those things of like, you know, even though we get along, maybe we have these other parts of these dynamics that wind up coming up that we're like, I don't know if I want to bring that up. You know how that goes.
A topic where we won't be, you know, in, you know, so copacetic. So let's kind of coming us back to the table here. We're in chapter 10. We do have different versions, so sometimes there is that conflict, which makes it a little more exciting and spicy, and at times too. But at the beginning of mine here, it talks about so far in this book. So we're at chapter 10, and it talks about talking about the initial creation of a conscious partnership, about the narrowing those exits that, you know, we look for when it's like, oh, my God, it is. Like, we're getting a little more complicated. Increasing pleasurable interactions, part of that romancing and those fun lists. And now creating that greater intimacy. And he's also discussed several ways to increase knowledge of yourself and your partner. And the time now is to talk about healing deeper childhood wounds, which we've been talking about throughout the whole book, but really more moving into just saying, yeah, that causes that and that causes problems, now into we're moving into now what the heck do we do about it, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, I'm excited about it too. And I, you know, I have the first edition. Amy's got the third or fourth edition. Not
the third, the latest. Yeah, it's the last one. So there's
the third,
yeah,
okay. Okay. With the first edition, a lot of it really is totally, you know, as we've talked about with the whole book, of these unmet needs that you have in childhood when you have these caretakers, you know, for better or worse, the way that they made you feel good or bad about your emotions and different circumstances that you go through. And there was always this judgment about what you did or didn't do. So these have these things that we're always seeking to heal because we knew that they were messed up when we were little. Well, we couldn't do much about it just because of our dynamics of where we were in our lives, being able to stand up and speak, you know, speak for ourselves or take care of ourselves in a way that made sense for everything. So, you know, part of this. Go ahead.
So much of this is unconscious. It's not that we know it's happening.
Well, no, we do now because we've been reading this book.
Well, we're so brilliant now. Yes, I know. But for, you know, but it's taken
a lot
of work.
We're like,
right?
Oh, that's childhood. Oh, that's childhood. Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. If you look back, you know, we're talking about all the books that we've had in the book club. I really want to encourage people to go back and work through those because that has really helped me to grow in many, many different ways. It's looking at these different types of work and how do I relate to that and how do I make sense of that. But I find this all the time, and it blows my mind when I talk to people about that if they're not looking at how they're feeling and what they're thinking before they take action, there's probably going to be a mess to clean up. And I think that's what a lot of this is about. It's really going, before you do that thing, that there's going to be a price, which you may not realize because it's in that subconscious. Take some time.
Yeah, absolutely. When and I think part of it, too, is like one thing that's been really wonderful about doing the show. It's okay to be present moment. It's okay to be working with the different things that we're learning and being able to be, you know, real and authentic as you go along. I think that's something that we both learned and really support with each other. So, yay. Mhm. I think that's really good with all this.
I'd love to get Michelle into this conversation, you know, next time we talk to her. But here in my version, it talks about why self-love doesn't work and that it doesn't heal us. And that's why you have to have another person mirroring for you and giving you maybe that love. For me, I didn't get unconditional love as a child. At least I didn't feel like I did. And I believe part of that was, and again, not about a blaming thing, but that being critical was looked at as that's how I hope you to be better. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is that I love you enough to criticize you so you will perform better. So you'll be a better person. You'll be more successful. Well, for me, I would have liked to had more unconditional love. Is that right or wrong? It doesn't matter. It's just the facts of it. So me trying to give myself, and again, this is from the chapter, what he's talking about is the reason this approach doesn't work is that it's sabotaged by the old brain. The old brain will allow you, yourself, to do that healing, that it has to come from outside of you. So it would be interesting to have Michelle as part of this conversation. I'd like to ask her about it next time we have her, working with us. But what comes to you about that?
About the old brain?
No, what they're saying is you cannot heal these childhood wounds by yourself.
I think that's very interesting because, I think I've lived, at least a part of my adult life seeking to do that. I mean, if you look into just New Age healing, with spirituality, well, even in Christianity, I mean, there's when you look at that about being able to have self-love and self-compassion for yourself, I mean, there's so many things out there that basically are really promoting that. And then to find out that, we look at, I'm not here alone on the planet. So definitely there's the encouragement and the opportunities to interact with other people to basically get that healing. So once you understand it and you look at it from a full circle, you could see why, it doesn't really make sense that, you only can go within yourself to heal. It reminds me of the story of a Buddhist monk was up, up in a cave, and he just studied, and he was so great with himself. And then he goes down to the village thinking he's got it all figured out, and there's a parade, and he about loses his mind because he's having to interact with all these people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's really, it's a really fascinating thing because you hear in self-help world so much of the time, if you just have enough self-confidence, if you just love yourself enough, everything else will be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes against that, and I believe he's right. And here he talks about the limits of, even friendship. He says, after numerous experiments, I concluded that the love we are seeking has to come not just from another person within the context of a safe, intimate relationship, but from an imago match, someone so similar to our parents that our unconscious mind has them fused. So I know for myself personally, again, I did not get the unconditional mother love that I needed. So I somewhat unconsciously, but it became very conscious at a certain point, looking for women to fill that void for me. And and that has helped me a lot because I could only go so far myself.
Well, I think there too is then when you, in reading this book, you know, you really understand that with parents and you know, your caregivers, where they're wounded and they can't give it to themselves, it just gets carried on to the next person. So, you know, when it comes to, you know, your parent, if they're not capable, you know, how great that we finally realized that, you know, that wasn't really their place to do that. I'm really going to seek to find it in someone that can nurture me. And I thought
it's really important to the point that he's saying, and again, whether you believe it or not, you put it there, and I'm not saying you, but anybody who's listening to this, that his premise is you cannot do it yourself. And I think people need to kind of look at that, because I think that has become part of our, you say, this whole self-help culture, that if you just do your own work, you'll be able to fix it. And I do think that there is really something in that. That's why we project positive and negative in order to bounce it back. So I think if you can accept that and to do this in a healthy way, and there's going to be an exercise here we'll talk about in a little bit.
Okay. And I thought, well, along with that too, as they were talking about with the, you know, being able to connect with other people, they were talking about this significant other. One lady had talked in a workshop with Harville about the fact that, why don't I just pick somebody who's totally opposite of me? Because then I won't have all these conflicts and things going on. And he said, you'd be better off going to computer dating or having it where you have an arranged relationship and you have these two people being brought together by somebody else. Because he said, when you're left your own means, you know, we're automatically, he said, we're doomed to have these kind of things coming up, because I think we're innately wired to have those things come up so we want to be healing them, but we definitely are setting ourselves up for conflict. So I think that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go computer dating. All right, there you go. Computer friendships. There you go.
Well, you know, that'd be interesting. You could, you know, right, start asking for, I need somebody with this kind of pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That'd be interesting.
Well, that makes a pretty conscious person that know that they actually do that, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on what's going on, you know, depending on what it is. I mean, some people are like, yeah, I do that. They're like, okay, you're good.
Well, I think at a certain point, right, you know, if you have the courage, you will. But I think it takes a lot of courage. You know, and he talks about here turning the theory into practice. And he says, I began to focus on my attention on turning the healing potential of love relationships into workable reality. And he said, I began to develop an exercise called the behavioral change request dialogue. And he said that it was along the same kind of lines as re-romancing exercise, but this is a little bit different in that it was just really looking at behaviors that you needed to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, do you have that in your version?
Well, with mine, it goes to the next step. You actually would make a list of the different things that are, you know, your frustrations, the chronic frustrations and things like that. And then you would basically ask your partner to go ahead and number them in the sense of importance, which I thought was interesting. So, you know, you're naming it and you're giving it, you know, a sense of importance. So that's interesting. But along with that, there was an agreement in the way that you would interact with it, where there, you know, it wasn't like an obligation or whatever. You would automatically start listing things that you would be in doing and supporting one another to be able to have those things come up and be able to, you know, what are ways that I could be, like a frustration could be, you know, you never do the dishes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of them would be doing the dishes and doing it in a way where it wasn't a resentment. It's a matter of, like, something I do for you and also for me, just in a way of taking care of our home and seeing it from a different perspective.
So let's look at how he, there, and there's this an interesting part of this that that he says is critical before asking for the specific things. He talks about, he said that he asked Melanie to state what she wanted that would remove frustration and fear and hurt behind it. He said, I asked her to put it in global terms using words like always and never. In the unconscious mind, our wishes have no boundaries. We want everything all the time. I have learned that it's important for people to state this global wish. Even though they realize they will not get it, it helps them focus on the childhood wish embedded in the frustrations. I mean, isn't that fascinating?
That is fascinating.
So first off, you do this global thing, which I think kind of goes against what, you know, what a lot of people, again, we're going against the grain of traditional, quote-unquote, self-help that, you know, that's been around for a long time. So let's look at, so within a specific case, what does he mean by a global request? He says, what I want most, Melanie started saying, is to know that I am important to you all the time and that you always are thinking of me and that I am more important than your work, always. And so, right, but who, most of us are like, oh, my God, that's way too big, right? I can't make those kind of statements. Right?
It's like, oh, okay, you can wish that all day long, but that isn't going to make it so. Okay, anyway.
But he's saying, right, that you need to do that to kind of, like, open things up to be kind of to create a pathway. Kind of like what I kind of imagine is, you know, it's like here in Vegas when you're, you know, doing the setting up for Hoover Dam, they had to create these massive tunnels in order to get, you know, resources to where they were building the dam. So they had to create these big tunnels first to get the resources there. So that kind of, you know, reminds me of that. And then to now, it says, now, Melanie, I want you to write down a list of specific behaviors that would help you feel more cared for, important, and loved. You will give Stuart some concrete information about how he could become a more positive force in your life. So I think it takes a lot of moxie to be able to say, I want you to care about me always, all the time, always be thinking about me, you know? And, you know, so, I mean, can you see yourself doing that in your life, Robin?
I could see myself doing it as an exercise.
Okay, well, I guess, okay,
but
cool.
In the reality, yeah, but the reality of that would be knowing that that's not true. You know,
you're trying to circumvent, right? And
you're
trying to wake up your unconscious a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And open up possibilities. So,
well, think about it when you're little. I mean, you would feel that way when you're little.
Sure.
And
yeah, right. And that,
I want to always be the focus of your attention, and I always want you buying my blah blah blah. You know, it's always like. And everything, right?
So maybe going back to that, you know, we talk about in mindfulness, right, coming from child mind, so maybe a beginner's mind, right? So maybe that's part of it. So that would be,
yeah,
you know.
Maybe that is. That's interesting. Maybe that is when you think, then ultimately coming from beginner's mind. I mean, if I were a small person not experiencing that ever before, where how much would I be of like always? It's always, right? It seems way easier if you came from the perspective of beginner's mind. Why wouldn't it be always? I don't know any other way, right? Yeah, that's pretty profound.
I think so. So let's kind of be with that. So we're really coming from that, you know, that, and isn't that what we're doing, healing back to the child, right? To the safe child mind, the safe child heart. So that makes sense. So here, let me give you so. In my version, I imagine you have some kind of version. It's an exercise, and what Michelle has, you know, has told us, what they recommend is you read through the entire book and then do the exercises. So in my version, it's Chapter 14, Behavioral Change, Request Dialogue. So here, there are several examples. We're going to talk about the one is underneath each global desire, write three specific requests, each of which would help you satisfy the desire. It is important that your requests be positive and they describe a specific doable behavior. Remember the acronym SMART. Each behavior should be specific, measurable, achievable, relevant to the desire, and time limited. This then ask your partner to give you one of your requests as a gift. So I think I'll walk through through at least one of them here. And think about it. This would be, you know, certainly great in significant other relationship, but geez, wouldn't this be great at work, right? This would be good at really at anything when you're working with other people. So here, the global desire is, I would like to feel safe and relaxed when you're driving. And specific request one, for the next month when you're driving, I would like you to obey the speed limit. If the road conditions are bad, I would like you to drive even slower. Specific request two, for the next 2 weeks, before we get into the car, tell me you will drive within the speed limit and give me a hug. Request number three, 2 times next week, have a dialogue with me for 15 minutes and ask me how I feel when you drive beyond the speed limit and help me connect my fear to childhood.
Connected if you've got that much going on.
But, you know, but again, it takes doing this kind of work. And in, and in the book here, they show you what a vague request is and what a specific one is. They show you what a negative request is. Here, like here's a negative one. I would like you to stop yelling at me when you're upset. And there he's saying this should be rewritten to a positive behavior, positive request. For the next month, when you're mad at me, I would like you to ask me for what you want in a normal tone of voice. Give me a specific, time-limited, and positive request.
That's awesome.
So I think what a great exercise, and it, you know, it has great examples, and it's, you know, it, and again, learning this is helpful as a leader, as a parent, and any kind of relationship. It's an instead of me attacking you, right? You say, this is the global thing of this. These are this, you know, I don't feel safe, and these are the things that I need, and having the other person be able to do that about things in their life too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's awesome. Especially coming back to the perspective of leadership. And really, I mean, a lot of the work that that I've done and the way that people have introduced doing work is self-leadership.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
So totally coming from that place, whether it's, you know, leading myself or leading a group, you know, how would I step forward in that and being able to be authentic and even catching yourself and asking, you know, because, I mean, to say you request for other people, you could request that of yourself.
Right. And
that would be interesting.
I think being a leader starts with being a good self-leader.
Mm-hmm.
So, and going through this whole dialogue, so back to the chapter, that was at the exercise, back at the chapter, he's working with Melanie and Stuart, and in fulfilling a wish of hers, what ended up happening was that Stuart found out that there was something that was part of the wish for him too that he didn't recognize by fulfilling that for her. And he says it came as no surprise to me that the thing Melody wanted most, one partner's desire is often matched by the other person's greatest resistance, and that so he was fighting it. But once he started doing behaviors to make her feel safer, he realized that there were some things that he wanted that he didn't realize by supporting her. Here was a closeness that he wanted that he didn't realize he didn't have.
Yeah, I just think that's so. Yeah, that's like the epitome of what's really kind of happening here is when you can come from this place. And it's interesting because Harva really talks about. It's kind of the duh moment that if you can really define what the frustration, you know, all these things that seem to be chronic, you know, it just kind of reminds me of like, it's never really what you argue about. It's that underlining thing that's really happening, that kind of thing. That if you can define what those things are, that if, you know, once a complaint is stated, the healing comes when by converting it into a desire and then describing it in a positive ways that you can change your behavior and that will satisfy that core desire. So it's really being able to, you know, and I think a lot of that's just practice. You know, you catch it, be able to turn it around and then look at it. So that's, I think that's why, you know, imagine if you could do that with all your frustrations in your life and being able to just turn those around.
Right. Well, I think we do. I think we have a great opportunity for that. And that if you really believe, right, that everything in your life is designed for your learning, then yeah, that's the case. And an interesting, he said, and Herb said, I have witnessed the phenomena of two-way healing so many times in my work with couples that I can say now with confidence that most husbands and wives have identical needs, but what is openly acknowledged is one is denied in the other. So as, and so back to, you know, what they were going through, so somehow in the act of responding to Melanie's needs for more intimacy, Stuart was discovering a hidden need of his own. And so that's what they're saying is, go ahead.
Go. What I think is fascinating is that I know when, you know, Andy and I have gone through marriage counseling, and the counseling would always say the only person you can change is yourself. So in coming from that perspective of looking what the other person's needs are and how that affects you, and knowing that, you know, in the fact that both willing to change and have it be something that, you know, keeps continually coming from a support, you know, support, you know, mechanisms with each other, how that would change the whole relationship. It's a totally different way of working with couples.
Yeah, and so think about this. Oh, I'm doing this for you, right? No, not really.
No.
But here, this summary,
when I do it for
here,
you, I'm actually doing it for me. Yeah.
Well, here he talks about the rewards and resistance. He says, Melanie and Stuart reaped three important benefits from doing the behavioral change request dialogue. Number one, the partner who requested the change of behavior was able to resolve some childhood needs. Number two, the partner who made the changes recovered six of the lost self. And number three, the partner who made the changes satisfied repressed needs that were identical to the other partners. I mean, like, wow. So you're really thinking, you know, I'm doing this work for you. No, you're not. You know, yeah, great. You're, you know, that's cool. But it's really, it's very reciprocal. You're not only healing them, you're healing yourself, or you two would not have been brought together.
You know, and that's interesting because, like, Michelle and I have had a couple conversations lately, such as with other, you know, books and stuff that she's read, and we were sharing the same kind of concept with each other about ultimately when things come up with another person, it's, you know, how does that affect me and having it be able to come back to myself and heal myself.
I think it's always that way, right?
It came up for both of us, and it ended up feeling like a conflict, but ultimately it was something that was our greatest salvation.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and it's so beautiful when you could step back from that. It's like when I remember when we had a mutual friend that Michelle was mad at, and she told me about it, and I go, yay, she make you mad. And she goes, yay. We wound up laughing about it and being appreciative of it. So I think that's really just interesting how that it is the wow. It is such a wow factor. I mean, this chapter alone, you know, it's so profound, but yet so simple. And I think, you know, when it comes to the spiritual lessons of life, that's really what it is anyway. It's all these small things that if you get it, and it's like, oh, is that what that is? That's all, oh, okay, okay. Not that it's easy until you really practice and work with it for a while. But when you do get it and you're willing to be diligent about the practice of turning the turnaround, like we talked about with Byron Katie before in other shows, of being able to name it and then see it in ourselves, how profound that is.
And here to bring it at home, on the very last page, here it talks about that it is when you direct your energy away from yourself and towards your partner that deep level psychological and spiritual healing begins to take place. When making a request rather than reacting becomes a standard method of dealing with criticism and conflict, you will have reached a new stage in your journey towards conscious partnership. You will have moved beyond the power struggle and the stage of awakening and to the stage of transformation. Your relationship will now be based on mutual caring and love and the kind of love that can best be described by the Greek word agape. And agape is self-transcending love that redirects eros, the love force, away from yourself and towards your partner. As one transaction follows another, the pain of the past is slowly erased, and both of you will experience the reality of your essential wholeness.
Beautiful.
I know, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we move into that, and next chapter is creating a sacred space.
There you go. Well, you know, and I don't know why, but I just think of older couples when they've gone through trials and tribulations with one another. And, you know, and whether they it's conscious or unconscious, there's a certain level of embracing that they have with each other about, you know, not you know, getting, you know, ruffled over the little stuff. You know, whether they're learning from that, I know hopefully they are learning from that, like we're talking about, where it's ultimately coming back to myself for growth, or having just a level of compassion in the end, being able to, you know, have acceptance with each other. I think there's elements of the agape that happen.
Absolutely. You know, and what how what a great thing to look at and say, yay, that's what we're walking towards.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and may I step into that, you know, more and more every day and have gentle reminders of, you know, being able to can continually, you know, remold and have it be something that it's that much more of, you know, that creation every day. Okay. Give me that little warm fuzzy.
Well, and I feel that in our relationship, we have been moving slowly and steadily towards that, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, I'm grateful for that too. So I visited Amy over the weekend, and we wound up picking our next book for the cafe. I'm very excited. We'll probably won't start it till July, and we're going to have a few guests on the shop, so we can kind of, you know, stir things up. We've been doing this book for quite a while, so I think we're getting ready to close it out and move on to something else. So our next book is going to be The Resilience Factor, and it's 7 Keys to Finding Inner Strength and Overcoming Life's Hurdles. And it wanted to just being something that literally popped out in front of me and just feels like a real good fit. And Michelle and our friend Lisa has also wanted to come on and be able to look at that too. So it's The Resilience Factor by Karen Reivich. It's R-E-I-V-I-C-H, Ph.D., and Andrew Shatte, S-H-A-T-T-E, Ph.D. If you want to go out, and we got it at Barnes & Noble, so if you guys want to go grab that, that's going to be our next book that we're going to be doing probably, like I said, closer to getting into July of this year. So really great book, and one I really love about it so far, just looking at the introduction, is it's one of those books that they're saying, you know, we don't want you just to read this and put it down. There's going to be ways of being able to look at your resilience of where am I now and how do I start working with all those different factors. So I don't know. Have you looked at it all, Amy?
I have not. I've been so into the, you know, this book. I haven't done that yet.
Okay, okay. Well, just give a little preview for people like that. So I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And then we're going to go ahead, like I said, going into our next factor of, like, moving in from that agape love and where we are with, you know, keeping the relationship in this way of continually just beginner's mind and moving into this great stuff. So thank you, Miss Amy, for joining me.
My honor. Great fun.
Okay. And we want to thank our international audience as well. Just really appreciate all your comments, questions, anything you have going on with that. And again, we will see you next time here at the cafe. Thanks for joining us.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.